We were up through the middle of the passage here. Right, so we had just seen Reb Nechemiah's friend die from being too pampered in life. And so apparently he told him, I'm not going to give you exactly what you ask for. Are you willing to slum? Are you willing to lower your standards to eat what I eat? And he dies, and the Gemara says that woe is to him, that Nechemiah says woe is to him, that he let himself get to that stage through his pampering of himself, through his becoming too accustomed to such luxuries. So when we last saw that, so we had a number of questions as to what exactly the chiddush is, what exactly is the reason that Reb Nechemiah didn't just go all out. You know, is it because he himself couldn't afford it? Is it because he could afford it but didn't live his own life that way? And is that some type of a cap on Dei Machzoro? Or is this a situation where Dei Machzoro didn't apply, which is very possible? Or is there a middle ground? Dei Machzoro does apply, but maybe there is a value to try to encourage the Oni to be able to handle a lower standard, and maybe that's itself a part of Dei Machzoro. So we had all those questions from that passage. So to pick up from there, the Gemara gives another case, where it says, how the Osla kamei de Rava, somebody came in front of Rava and asked for money. So Rava said to him, Amalo bame'ata soe. So what do you normally eat? So says, Amalo batarne goles betumo v'yayin yashan. So I like fat fowl and old wine. So he's a little surprised. This guy really is living high, and they asked him for tzaka. So he asked him, Amalei v'lo chayshu l'duchto v'tzibura. Are you not worried that such a lifestyle imposed on the tzibur is going to be a burden? So don't worry, it's not coming from you. It's all coming from God. Right? Like that story about the guy whose daughter wants to marry a coal guy. You know the story, right? And they asked the man, how does he like the prospective son-in-law? And he says, he's great, he thinks I'm God. What do you mean? He says, but every time I ask him, how are you going to eat? He says, God will provide. So here's the marker, right? That's the exact line here. It's not coming from you. It's coming from God. Right? All the food comes at God's time. You see that it's really God who does all the giving. So as he says this, who shows up? Mysterious sister of Rava, the Chazle Tleis Hashani, who was not seen for 13 years. What a coincidence. Sounds like a writer's device. You all of a sudden have to, like the character, we need a sister now to provide the meal, so we'll make one up. So she hasn't shown up for 13 years, so boom. Here she has exactly what this guy wants. So he's quite impressed. Rav says, Amar, might the Kama, wow, look what happened to Amalei, Nanesi l'cha kumachol, okay, I spoke too soon, come and eat. And what's the point of that story? So, does that tell us something about Dei Machzoro? Does it tell us something about Staka? Any message from that story, Aryeh?
There seems to be a theological message of the funds that the poor person gets is really coming through from God, but through the community.
So that seems to be part of it, right? So certainly seems to be that the end of the story is that you should know that the tzedaka is really your shlichus, so it's not really your decision, but you are God's emissary to get the tzedaka to the person, Shmuley.
More practically, it sounds like you do have to provide the ani with what he's lacking, even if it is chicken and wine and whatever.
Okay. So I wonder, though, is that clear from the Gemara? Maybe. Yeah, because the Gemara might be just saying, it happened, that it showed up, so that was God's sign. What if the sister hadn't showed up?
It sounds like it's saying that, Rava said, do I really have to provide for you? And then it sounds like Hashem's kind of answering.
Well, I guess also because he said, I spoke too soon. Right? He basically
like,
apologized.
He's really happy, there's some sort of sin or something around.
Okay, that could be. Morty?
Yeah. Even though he said he spoke too soon, so his concern originally was that the tzibur would be burdened by it, and in the end they're not going to be burdened by it. So even though he says I spoke too soon, it's really not necessarily that he's retracting what he was concerned about before, but that's no longer a concern.
So that's also a question. Is he really saying to him, listen, we can't handle this, we're a poor tzibur, and there's very little chance of any lost relative showing up in the next few minutes for food? Or is the point that, listen, you know, there's something you should think about here, that you should try to adjust your tastes. If you're going to come around asking for tzedakah, then it's not appropriate for you to have such a lavish palate. So you can see it either way. Because if it's the second, though, that also gives other importance to this passage, and maybe this passage is telling us that there is an inyan for the ani to try to adjust his day machzoro, that on the one hand, we have to be there for the day machzoro of the ani, but on the other hand, it's worthwhile for the ani to try to do what he can to be able to accept less. It's not that the ani is supposed to just show up and say, oh, I'm entitled to day machzoro, where's my check here, I'll fill out exactly what I want and I'm entitled. No, that tzibur is supposed to help him whatever he's lacking, but it's also the imperative or the recommendation that the ani should do what he can to try to make that more reasonable, which could then flow from the previous sukkah, the Nechemiah's point of kind of asking him, well, okay, you want this, but you think you can handle that. Maybe that's all one point, that there is, on the one hand, if this is all he can handle, so the ani is supposed to get what he needs, but there's also an inyan to try to adjust what he needs. You know, so maybe there's that kind of attention here. Maybe there is that kind of the balance. I think parenthetically, this is not the subject, but I think you find this in Shiduchim also, that you know, things that people are looking for in Shiduchim. So on the one hand, so we have an inyan that we should try to focus on the real important things in life. On the other hand, sometimes people are kind of fixated on things that are less important. So, well, I said that's what a person needs, so that's all that's going to work out in terms of the shidduch. Okay, so then that's the metzias, and then you have to work towards that. But if it's possible to strive for something that's more fundamental, and that's more based on what's really important in life, so that's appropriate. So I think that's something that's often missed in the shidduch discussion sometimes. And perhaps that's also the dynamic here, that we have these two different points, that we have to deal with whatever the metzias is in terms of what the ani's needs are. But that doesn't change the fact that maybe the ani should try to do what he can to make his needs a little bit more reasonable. So theoretically, that could be the message of both stories. But in the second story, the ani ends up getting this heavenly gift, and the first ani ends up dying. So it's not a great... not a great position to be in, to be the first ani. Much better to be the second ani. Okay, so now the Gemara has a couple of other points which we're going to have to deal with separately because they have important halachic significance, but we'll just see them now as they come up in this context. So Tana Rabbanan, Ein Lo, Ve'en Arotzeh L'Hisparnes. So let's say somebody doesn't have, but he also doesn't want to take from Staka. So Nosu Lo L'Shum Halva. So we give it to him as a loan at first. And then we give him l'shem matana. That's Reb Meir's position. V'chacham lo, v'chacham say the other way around. Nosen lo l'shem matana. V'chozru nosen lo l'shem halva. That first we give it as a gift, and then we make it alone. So I ask the Gemara, l'shem matana halo shakel. So what do you mean we give it to him first as a gift? We just already established that he's not interested in accepting gifts. So miravel of toach lo l'shem matana. That we should start off by asking him to take it as a gift. Yeshlo, Yehina Rotzel, his barnes. Let's say he does have, this is going to be an important topic we'll have to look at more carefully also. So let's say he does have and he's not interested in supporting himself from what he has. So Nosen lo l'shem matana. So then we give it to him as a gift. V'chozrim v'nifroim mimenu. So later on, take it back as a loan. Which has all kinds of implications, right? It has implications in terms of how tzedakah should be given to such a person. Also has implications in terms of honesty. You know, the issue is how upfront you have to be with somebody if you're essentially doing the right thing and he's doing the wrong thing. So is it permissible to be less than completely straightforward with him? You find this in a few other places in Shas. Not even just what we talked about last semester about the Lashon Pnei HaShalom. But here, this is really not in the category of Lashon Pnei HaShalom because you're essentially putting the other person at a disadvantage, but it's a disadvantage that maybe he's supposed to be in. It's a disadvantage that reflects the justice of the matter, so maybe that's appropriate. That's something that has fascinating implications also worthy of separate investigation. So, ask the Gemara, but wait, Chozrim Nefronim Lanos, if you're going to take back the money afterwards, so then they're going to end the relationship that way. Tu Lo Shakel, he's not going to end up taking anything further. So Amar Papa Le'achim Nisa. So Papa says that, no, you don't take it right away. Later on, you eventually can collect. So if Shimon Omar Yeshlo Ve'ena Rosel Hispanis. So let's say somebody has enough and he doesn't want to support himself. So his opinion is, ain't this cock and low, that we're not going to worry about it. Ain't low of Anorosal's Barnes, but if he doesn't have it, he doesn't want to be supported. So Amlo, we say to him, Havei Mashkon Vitol. Then we say, so then bring a pledge and then take the money. In other words, give him the impression that it will be a loan. Kadesha Tazua Chala Daito Olav. So he should feel better that apparently he didn't want to take from Staka. So if you give him the impression that he's going to have to pay it back, so then that will make him a little bit more comfortable with what he's doing, and then it'll work. Hi, question. So Tana Rabbana. So we learned Havet Zesh Einlo Ben Rosas Barnes Shnosim Lshem Hava. Bechos Vnosim Lshem Matana. That's how that word should be read. Tavitanu Zesh Yeshlo Ben Rosas Barnes Shnosim Lshem Matana. Bechos Vnifronim Manalachem Misa. So the two double language in the pasuk Havei Tavitanu comes to tell us these two dinim that we just saw. Dibur Rabbi Yehuda, that's Rabbi Yehuda's position. The Chachamim Omer Yeshlo Ve'ena Rosa L'Hisparnes, and the Chachamim say that if you have somebody but he doesn't want to support himself, Ein this Kakin Lo, that you don't have to worry about him at all. So therefore, Elamani Mekayim Tavitanu. So then, what's the second word? Therefore, it's not there for anything. Dibur Torah Chaloshim Bnei Adam. It's a simple double language, like we find sometimes in the Torah. It uses the way people talk. It uses poetic language. And it doesn't have any particular significance. Okay.
Is that an argument in Torah Kolashim B'nei Adam?
It's not in
general. Or in this particular section? Meaning, are these two positions arguing about that?
There is a machlokus about that in general. So, certainly consistent with my focus.
I'm asking if it's in this specific case, what is it? What two double words? What's the double words?
Kefal Lashon?
Kefal Lashon here.
Mm-hmm.
That's Dibur Lashon Adam. Are they arguing in this case, or are they arguing in general the philosophy of Dibur Torah?
I mean, there is such my focus in general, so this would seem to be an example of it. And whether this is another such a case, or do we have to assume that there is a meaning to the pasuk? Now, it's interesting, you say this is the meaning of the pasuk, and you're specifically coming to exclude the position of Dibur Torah B'Lashon Adam, so you're saying essentially that this is a din d'oraisa, that the Torah is giving rather clear direction on how exactly to address somebody in this situation, which is very interesting. You know, what exactly is the responsibility of the Ani, essentially, towards the receiving of tzedakah, and how is that handled? So apparently that's a din min ha-Torah, that's a drash from a pasuk. That's what it sounds like, and it's not nasmachta, because the other opinion is that we're not darshaning the pasuk. It sounds like it's an actual drasha. So that's also something to reflect on. Okay, so the Gemara has another story. So Marukva have anya v'shivusa. So Marukva had a certain poor person in his neighborhood, have a ragil kol yoma d'shadalei arve zuze b'tzenuru d'desha. That every day he would throw four zuz in his door receptacle for hidden money. So Yom Echad, so one day, this person was wondering what exactly was going on, where was his money coming from? Amar Yizal Ichsi Manka Avibi Hao Tibusu. I want to see who it is who's doing me this favor. So Ha Yoma Nagal Marukfa Beba Joshua. So it happened to be that day that Marukfa was behind a little bit. It was a little bit late. Asi the Bisu Bahaday, and he was walking together with his wife, Kevin the Khazyu, the Kamatse Ladasha, Nafik Pasrahu. So once this person saw that somebody was coming to his door, so he went after that person and they didn't want to be seen, so wrote Mikame. So they ran away from him. So Aile Lahawa Suna. Have a grufa, nura. So they found this furnace that had just been swept up. It was still a pretty hot place. Have a kamakilan kare de marukva. So marukva's feet were getting burnt up from all the ashes. So amalei devisu. So his wife said, you know, kind of showing off here. Hey, no problem. Shakol karechad osi vakaroi. Hey, no problem. You can take your burning feet and put them on top of my feet, which are totally not burning at all. So cholish daite. So he. Understandably, was a little bit discouraged by that. Was shot in his wife's superhuman feet. So Amrle, she said to him, "Ana shchichna bigadei beisa. I happen to be at home all the time, and makarva hanasai. Hanasai, and I'm able to benefit the Aniyim more directly than you are. So therefore, I have greater skos, so I have magic feet, and you're lucky you married the right person. So, umai kulihai, so what's pshat in this whole thing? So they did all this, and they had to draw on her superpowers just because they're running away from this guy they were trying to help. So what's pshat, what's all that for? Damar zutubatuvya, amarav, v'yamri lamaravun barbizna, marubshim chasid, v'yamri yochim, mishim rishim al yochai, noach lo liadam, shiyinsor atzmo lo taifivshon ha'esh, because it's a terrible avera to embarrass someone in public, and that's what they were trying to avoid. How do we know that there is such an issue? How do we know this? From the story of Tamar, which we discussed. Those who were with us last semester discussed this in Parshas here this year, because it's part of Revi of Parshas Vayesha, a little bit reverse synergy. It'll be good. Maybe we'll see if we'll still have time to talk about the sugya in this context a little bit also. But the pasuk says, "Dechsiyah hu mutzeis," that she was brought out, she was found, so kind of brought out against her will in the trial by Yehuda. And the Gemara says that Tamar was only willing to let Yehuda come forward on his own. She wasn't going to expose him so as not to embarrass him in public, and she was willing to risk death rather than do that. So here, just like she was ready to be thrown into a fiery furnace, they end up hiding in a fiery furnace so as to avoid embarrassing this Ani. Now, if we do take the time to talk a little bit about this particular issue of Habmanis Pnei Chaver Barabin, so there are some fascinating implications specifically from the sugya. But one could also ask, let's think about this for a second, in anticipation of coming back to this. This din of Habanus Pnei Chaver Barabim, is the Gemara telling us here about a general application? Or is there a reason why it's in this sugya specifically? Are you?
Depends who's being embarrassed.
Okay.
I think. If Mar Ukvo didn't want to be embarrassed by being someone who gives people money, mm-hmm. that doesn't seem like that would be embarrassment.
Yeah.
It seems like, it seems like the person he didn't want to embarrass is that he would have to be face to face with someone he's giving money to. So it tells you that it's better to give money anonymously because there's some kind of embarrassment factor there.
Okay, so certainly this Gemara could be relevant to that, right? And you're familiar with the Rambam's different levels, the Kol of the ladder, the Rambam's the hierarchy of how to give tzedakah, and the idea that there is an advantage to not identifying yourself to the recipient. This certainly seems to be one mucker for that. So if we want to say that this Gemara is not simply repeating the din that you find in Brachos and Bar Mitzvah and in Sota and in Pesachim, that one should be ready to sacrifice themselves rather than embarrass them in public, is this Gemara telling us a different din? So yes, it could be telling us that step, that maybe there is a priority and advantage to not identifying yourself to the Ani. Sammy, you wanted to comment on that?
Yeah, just to add to that, that maybe also we're specifically putting this in this context of Dei Machsara, because we just quoted some stories or examples where somebody who was a higher stature wanted things that maybe seems a little ridiculous, but then we bring in this din to show that it's such a stringent din that even somebody who may seem like they don't need that much tzedakah, mm-hmm. it's even a little bit of embarrassment to them could be a big deal.
That's interesting. Is that clear from the Gemara that the story is a low level of staka this year?
The last story.
I thought you were going to go somewhere else, but it's okay. Continue the point.
I was just going to say, yeah, definitely the last story, I guess, is someone who maybe isn't, you know, that as wealthy.
Uh huh.
But still, because it does come after the three stories where people were pretty wealthy.
So that's true. I thought what you were going to say is that maybe that this is also part of Dei Machsara. That maybe the not embarrassing him is also part of the Dei Machzaro, because it was also consistent with what you mentioned the other day, that the example of Hillel running in front of the Eved, so maybe that's not about money, maybe that's about kavod. Right? I was trying to remember the other day who said this, I saw afterwards that the Kutzker is quoted as saying this, two separate points which are linked, that the story of Hillel running in front of the Eved maybe is there to show that Dei Machsara is not just about money, it's about other things such as kavod, which was, I think, the point Sammy made the other day. And also the linked point that maybe the kavod may seem not so worthwhile to the rest of us, but it may seem like a mishugas, and the Kutzker is quoted on that point as well, that even if it seems to us like a shtos, but that's the emotional need of the person you're dealing with, and therefore that could also be considered a machzoro. So perhaps here, this is not a... Here we're not dealing with something that's considered to be ridiculous. You know, they caught on to this concern more than he did, in fact. But that maybe this is a part of tzedakah. Right? That maybe this is in our sukkah in order to highlight that the mitzvah of tzedakah is not independent of how the person feels. That there's a difference between giving the tzedakah to the person, as much giving the same amount of money to the guy, but doing so while embarrassing him, and doing so while not embarrassing him, is two separate worlds. Even midinei tzedakah. Right, it's very possible that that's the point of the Gemara, that part of the mitzvah of tzedakah is to do it in such a way that doesn't embarrass him. So that's very relevant to our whole question about what is the mitzvah of tzedakah, whether it's about helping the person, whether it's about the midah, and how could the mitzvah be compromised by allowing the person to be embarrassed at the same time. The involvement here is significant, just parenthetically. It's especially relevant because one could argue, and again, actually, we'll take a little bit of a poll at some point, that, like I said, last semester we did, during Chumash year, talk about Habanos Pnei Chaver V'Rabim. It's a fascinating sugya. If there's interest in going into it in more detail through the Makaros as it comes up here, I'm happy to do so. But one could argue that this case is not really such a typical example. Because here, the Ani himself is really seeking out this confrontation. Right? So you might say that, first of all, in terms of the halachas of De Machzoro, it's not clear that that qualifies. Because the post can raise the question, is there a din of De Machzoro if the recipient doesn't realize what he's missing? Like if he doesn't feel the chisaro, so is there a din of De Machzoro imposed on him? Which is a little hard to say that there should be. But also, in terms of embarrassing, just to give one example, this is a point that we talked about during discussion last semester, but we didn't focus on this. So, the Gemara has this statement that embarrassing people is like killing them, which this Gemara is picking up on. So there was a famous psak that was not accepted by really any later posek of Rav Shlomo Kluger. Rav Shlomo Kluger, in his commentary to Shulchan Aruch, in the Chachma Shlomo, in the end of Choshen Mishpah, Rav Shlomo Kluger writes that somebody who sees somebody drowning in the river, so if he's able to save this person, he's obligated to do so. You have an obligation. But if you're going to drown yourself, so then you're not obligated to do so, and maybe you're not even permitted to do so. So what if, says Rav Shlomo Kluger, what if you could save someone else's life, but you'd have to humiliate yourself in the process? Are you exempt from doing it under those circumstances? What do you think? Well, sorry?
I think we mentioned this before.
Yes, we did mention this point. So Rav Shlomo Kluger says that you are exempt because it's like death, embarrassment is like death. So if you're not obligated to... If you're not obligated to kill yourself to save someone else's life, you're not obligated to embarrass yourself either. And everyone pretty much after him disagrees. So among them is Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who has a tshuva, where he talks about related issues. And a couple of reasons why he disagrees, but one point he mentions in the course of disagreeing is a Gemara Maseches Tainis, where the Gemara says there's a big difference between somebody who's humiliated by somebody else and somebody who himself does something knowing it's going to bring about embarrassment. In other words, he's saying that you can't really say that somebody who's going to decide to jump in the river and save this person's life knowing it's going to embarrass him, however that plays out, it's going to be less than being humiliated by another person. Somebody who willingly takes on the situation is already in a different category. So what about this guy? This guy is seeking out the confrontation, right? He knows somebody's giving him money, and he's looking to go see who it is. So it's not clear, at least the way Rav Shlomo Zalman understands it, that that would really be in the same category as the other Gemaras, that you're embarrassing somebody and you have to jump into an oven in order to avoid it. Unless you want to say, maybe, that the threshold of this Gemara is higher. Because maybe this Gemara is not just talking about general circumstances embarrassing people, but maybe it's a part of the tzedakah process. That maybe as part of giving tzedakah, you also have to have an even higher level of sensitivity to the embarrassment of the recipient. And therefore, that means that the tzedakah cannot be given in a way that will cause them to feel any shame. And maybe the insertion of this sugya into this sugya, the Abban Shnei Chavera sugya into the tzedakah sugya, has a special significance. Hi.
This is more Baal Batashur Pshat, but did Mar Okva necessarily know that the Ani was seeking him out?
Seems like it, yeah. Why'd they run away?
He didn't want to be caught giving the guy money. Maybe he didn't know why the guy was following him, but he didn't, on his side, trying to figure out what he was thinking, he might not have known that the other guy was seeking out to have this face-to-face.
So who was he running away from? Why was he running away?
He saw that the guy kept on, wherever he was going, the guy was a couple steps behind
him. He thought he was down the stalker. Doesn't sound like it from the Gemara. It sounds like, you know, they anyway knew he was coming, and they did so as not to embarrass him. I don't know if there's much room to see it differently, but could be. Tamir?
Sounds like this case, that any giving of tzedakah that would require you to face the person you're giving to is embarrassing. Therefore, you went to such great lengths, the guy wouldn't find out he was giving
tzedakah. Oh, okay, so then, right, so let's follow through that, right? So clearly that's not true, right? So clearly 97.5% of all tzedakah donations do have the people knowing each other.
And his wife says, I'm better than you because I gave it to the other end, but clearly she must have been.
Also a good point, right? So presumably she's not standing behind the door.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess also could maybe say she was. But presumably there's face-to-face confrontation. So all of a sudden, they're so makbid on it that most tzedakah interactions probably do happen face-to-face, and usually the ani is asking. And here, all of a sudden, it becomes such a chumra. All of a sudden, now we have to go to such lengths to make sure that there's no confrontation. So you could, again, maybe say that also illustrates that this is kind of making a point about just what a madrega of tzedakah this is, and clearly it's not to say that it's an isser, otherwise it's really hard, because all of the other situations are with that factor, so how could you really say it's usser? Although, still, the message comes out that once you're already exposed to each other, so you should still do whatever you can to be mimayit the embarrassment, which is certainly possible to do, right? And that's, Gemara is telegraphing here that that's a part of the mitzvah. But there could also be another aspect. So let's think about this for a second, right? So what is the difference between somebody who comes and asks you for money, and so we're not so worried that you see each other, and here, this situation, where maybe it would be a little bit more embarrassing for him to see his donors. What's the difference here? Well,
it's like his mentality. I mean, if he's going to your house to ask for your money, so A, he probably already knows who's in that house.
Mm-hmm.
B, it also might show that he's at a point where he doesn't really care so much about people knowing, meaning that
right.
He's going to your
so
house.
So clearly that's a part of it, right? That once the ani is willing to ask, so already then the face-to-face part is not such an embarrassment. But to have to say to the ani that, oh, you're poor, here, let me give you some money, so it's that very initiation that's already perhaps a type of bizayin that the average ani is not necessarily exposed to. So for somebody who's already asking for money, okay, so then they're going to know that you're there and that you're interacting. But for them to know who it is who evaluated on their own that you need money, that you need help, so perhaps that's a level of embarrassment that's not inherently there, and they're working hard in order to avoid that. Okay, in any event, there's some fascinating implications to this issue. Again, maybe we'll see if we want to spend more time on Habanas Bnei Chaver L'Rabim. I'm not on doing it, but I'm talking about it. So, the Gemara now tells another story. So, Mar Okva had an Anya Shabuse. Ukva had an ani in his neighborhood. Haviragel Shdure Bay Arba Mea Zuze Kol Mal Yoma De Kippura. That every Erev Kippur he would send him 400 zuz. There's some who ask a technical question on this. right, that the din is that you're only supposed to take stuck if you have less than 200 zuz. So he's actually knocking him out of the stuck category. So that itself is interesting, but maybe the fact that he does it in one shot helps. If he gave him 201 zuz and then wanted to give him another 199, then maybe that would be a bigger problem. But giving him 400 in the shot, okay, so that's what he would do every Erev and Kippur for the year. He would basically set himself up, set him up. So, Ben, do you have a question for me?
There's no like around.
In terms of what? In terms of
giving stock of the way
Oh, right, so that, right. So that's also to the Rambam in the Parish Mishnayos to Avos. That's also interesting, right? That he did it all in one shot. Why didn't he give it throughout the year? Good point. Although, you know, it could be that if this issue, this technical issue we just mentioned, then maybe that's part of it. That if he gave him it in two shots, then he would disqualify him from receiving stucco the second time. Okay.
Maybe he gave many people all the time.
Yeah.
This is just one person he gave on every pitch.
Seemed to be. That's quite a donation. So Yom Echad, so one day Shadrinu Nihalei Biad Bread. So once he used his son as a messenger to bring it to him. So Asa Amalei Lo Tzarech. So he came back. He said, "I went to this guy. He doesn't need your money. He's doing quite well." So Amar my Chazus. He says, "Really? What makes you say that? What'd you see?" He says Chazoi Dekamizalfi LeYayin Yashan. I saw that they're pouring for him old wine. So apparently he is quite well off. So what was the response? The response was, wow, Amar Rafane Kuli Hai. Wow, he is so accustomed to a high standard of living. Aifinu B'Shadrinu Nahale. So then he doubled his stipend and sent to him. So this was a very smart honey. He made sure to have this wine poured for him just as the sun was hearing so that he could double this already generous stipend here. So we see that he was very into giving. So when he was dying, Amar Aisile Khushbanoi did staka, the A said, bring him my staka chashban, ashkech tavik sivbe, shivas alpe dinaris seyanke. So he saw that he had 7,000 dinaris seyanke. Somehow that showed him that he had more staka left to gift. Amar Azavda Kalile, Vorche Rechikta. So he says, I don't have so much luggage, I am traveling very light, and I'm traveling for a very long journey, meaning that he's about to die, so he wants to come to Shemayim with as many Zchuyos as possible and doesn't feel like he has that. So Kam Bazbezei Lepalgei Lemamone. So he went and he spent half his money. So he gave half his money to Tzedaka. So Hechi Avid Hachi, how can you do such a thing? So Rabbi Loi, did Rabbi Loi not say, it's the Gemara and Daf Nun, which we'll look at in some detail after this. Do we not have such a din that a person is not permitted to give away a percentage of his money greater than a fifth? And here he gave away a half. So that's only true when he's alive. When he's alive, we're worried that he's going to impoverish himself if he gives away too much of his money. So we don't want that. But to give it away when he's dying, that's not a problem. There's much discussion about both halves of the sentence. Again, we will focus eventually on Mavazve's important din with all kinds of implications for halacha. And the qualification here that it's not true when you're dying and the implications for disinheriting your family members. So that's also something that we have to see what the halacha implications are. Morty, you had a...
Yeah, it might be tied to that last point about disinheriting family members, but why did he then not give all of his money?
Right, so that, you know, that presumably is the answer. He wanted to preserve something for his family. So the question is there an upper limit to that? Is the Gemara saying that this is, you can only do half then, or you can do a maximum half, the minimum of half? So what are the implications of that particular statement? It's an important topic, so God willing, we'll spend some time on that also.
Is someone allowed to accept money if the person sending it thinks that it's going to tzedakah and it's not really?
So who's doing that here?
It seems like the poor man, mm-hmm. so to speak, had a lot of money.
Right.
Actually had a lot of money.
Except that it's part of the whole demachsara factor that the... had lots, he was used to more. So that was his reaction. Because then, even after the fact, right, that was what he did. Right? And that was what the reaction was, that, oh, that's what he's drinking, so then he needs more money.
Meaning he had a lot now, when he was dying, it was 7,000 something. Sinaki, you know,
Sinaki. I think that was for him. That was the money that he had.
So surely he had even more than that, and he was giving half of
his money. Yeah, but that's not what the poor person has. Yeah.
Oh.
That somehow shows, you know, how much he had given in general. He was okay. I need to give more. Okay. So far, now what are we seeing here? So now we saw a couple of dinim which interact with Hafas Taka, which all deserve their own attention separately, and God willing, we'll get to. But as far as these sukkahs, which along the way told us about Havanis Bnei Chaver Barabim and Hamavazves and disinheriting and Aniyim who don't want to accept, but what points about De Machsoro emerged from here? So from the last story, it seems that, from the story about the furnace, we see that De Machsoro may also include emotional considerations, possibly, if that was the point. And from the more recent story, it seems like De Machsoro is going to extend even to somebody who's really living a very lavish lifestyle, if the assumption is that he's become accustomed to a very high standard, so De Machsoro is going to include that as well. So now the next sugya is really going to call that into question a little bit. So Rabbi Ava Havi Sire Zuzei B'Sudre, so Rabbi Ava would tie up some money to walk around with, and his... I think they used to go traveling with a big stick in the bag. So the shadi lay lachora, you throw it over his back and he'd walk around with it. He would walk around, make himself available to the poor people who might need him. But he would also keep his eyes directed backwards, as Rashi explains, in order to look to see who is being dishonest, who is a liar. So if Chanina, Havihau Anyad, Haviragal Shurib, Arbiz Zuze, Komaile Shapta. So if Chanina had a poor person who he would send only four Zuz, Nebuchadnezzar Arab Shabbos. So Yomachad, Shadrun, Nahale, Biad, Divisu. So one time he sent this with his daughter. Ashoy, she came back. Amrele, light tzarech. This guy doesn't need. I never good shit up for this girl. Son from the previous story. So, my chazis. So he said to him, "What did you see?" Says she said, "Shamoy." Actually, I didn't see anything, but I heard something. Shamoy, havika amrele domata soe. That what is it? What are you going to use to eat on? They asked him, are you going to use Tapas and Ches Meralis, Bitli Kasef, and Plizav? Do you want to use the silver tablecloth or the gold tablecloth? So to that he responded, Amr Hainu to Amr Rabbi Lazar, Bo, B'nach Siktobel Ramayim, the famous cynical somewhat line, that, oh, we're so lucky that there are liars in the world. Right? We're very fortunate that there are people who are dishonest. She'el Malahei, were it not for them, Hainu Chotim B'chol Yom, we would be considered sinners every day. Shenevar, excuse me, Kara Alechal Hashem B'hayah B'chachei, that the poor person who needs money, he will call out to God because you are neglecting him, and that will be considered an Aveira for you. So, it's a little bit of a complicated reading. It's basically saying that a poor person who's not being taken care of, he will be able to have a tain against you, and you'll be called a chote. But because you have an excuse that you're not a chote, which sounds like it's a raya for those who interpreted, like we spoke about last week, those who interpreted those sikbos, those amish, the lavin in the Torah, as only applying to somebody who doesn't have a good excuse. So here it sounds like what the Gemara is saying here. You have an excuse, so you're off the hook, even if it's somewhat of a pretext, because it doesn't say necessarily he is a liar, but that liars exist, so you could assume that he's one of them. So that's going to get you off the hook. So Tani Rebechia Barab Midifti, Reb Shubin Korcha, Omer Kalamailam Eit Kalamailam Einav Min Hatzdaka, Kilu Ovid Evaros Kechavim, that whoever hides himself away from Staka, right, this Mailam Einav, the same kind of lashon we find by Hashabbos Aveda, right, that if somebody kind of pretends, literally means that you hide yourself, but it really practically means you hide it from yourself. You pretend, like the guy with the newspaper on the train when the pregnant woman comes on, so he pretends that he doesn't see her because he puts the newspaper in front of his eyes. So too, if you hide your eyes so it looks like you don't see what's going on, so that's like a vizara. So, well, it's a lot. Why is it like a vizara? that you shouldn't have this blial attitude not to want to lend money. In both cases, we're talking about then for either avodah zarah or something that is equivalent. So Tana Rabbanan. So now the Gemara tells us about the recipient who takes it. Hamasame is eno, v'hamitzabe is bitno, v'makafeach is shoko, that somebody who falsely makes his eye look blind, makes his stomach look bloated, makes his leg look swollen. If he does all those things, so eno niftar, or any one of those things, eno niftar m'ra'ol machi yavol dekach, so he's not going to be able to live out his life happily without having to actually have these problems. And in that vein, hamakabel tztaka, v'ein sarach lekach, somebody who receives staka and doesn't need it, sofo in nifta min olam ad shiyavo l'deka, will not live out his days without coming to need it. Now let's just pause there for a second. Let me ask you a question. So what's the significance of that statement, right? That was a harsh criticism of somebody who accepts staka and doesn't really need it. So what's the practical implication of that statement? Is that an isser?
If it was an Isser, it would have said it was an Isser. Rather, it's a promise that that's a really bad thing to do. It's an awful, or a morally bad thing to do.
Okay, perhaps.
It has to be an Isser under, like, Gazela, even if it's not, like, a specific Isser.
Maybe.
There's a name Isser.
Your name is
Das. Right, sorry?
Your name is Das.
It could be Gnev is Das. So it could be that there's a couple of different levels to this. It could be that... Now, actually, let's see how the Rambam brings it, now that you're mentioning it. Let's see what the Rambam's exact language is. I don't have drawing in here. I don't have my fancy schmancy. Alright, so we could look up later what the Rambam's exact language is. But the point that I'm trying to bring to your attention here is that it could be a couple of things. It could be that there is an issue. So Morty was asking a second ago, Misvar, saying, right, how could it not be Gezel or as Aaron is asking, Gnevus Das, to take money that you don't deserve. So it could be those... Oh, thank you. Space. So it could be that it's those things also, which we would know without the Gemara, right? But you all asked that question in Svar. But it could be that the Gemara is maybe making a different point here that is maybe in line with what we were saying before about that delicate balance when it comes to De Machzoro and the giver and the recipient. That what if we're talking about something in between, right, where the guy is not mamish a faker, but he could manage. He doesn't have to necessarily end up in a stucco situation, and he does. So, happens to be the very last halacha in Hachos Matnas Aninim. Says the Rambam, Kol mishen otzarech litol, umirame esam. Somebody who doesn't need to take, and he fools people. The notel, eno meisman hazikna, achieves tarech lebrios. Will not to live out his life of old age without having to require tzedakah from other people. V'reyu b'chlal oru hagever asher yiftach lo adam. V'chol misha tzarech litol v'eno yochol v'hachios. Somebody who needs to take and can't live, elon kein notel, v'on zokin ocholo bal yisurin, negiz daito. Somebody who thinks he's so noble that he needs to take stock and refuses to and ends up dying because of that, so that's not so great either. We have no credit for such a person. And somebody who does need to take, but somehow fetches through, instead of taking, manages to live on very little and not impose himself on the seabor. So he, the opposite, he will live out his life, but eventually end up giving somebody, being somebody who does give stuck at the The alav kol kiyotzev is that nemar baruch hagever asher yivtach b'Hashem. So actually this is very interesting, especially if you take this within the way the Rambam phrases all this, which is kind of supportive of the possibility I wanted to suggest here. Is that what if this Gemara is not really talking about a straight out phone? Right? The Gemara is not necessarily saying that you're actually lying to people completely, but we're talking about this middle ground of somebody who could really manage without being Matriyah Fitzibur, but feels he's entitled to anyway. So perhaps that's in line with what we were talking about before with Nehemiah and with the other story, that maybe we have this balance here. Well, nicely, you need stakas, okay, you take it. But there is also a value to trying to do what you can to avoid having to take stakas. So the way the Rambam formulates this whole story here is a very delicate balance. Right, that if you're supposed to take tzedakah and you choose to suffer and die instead, there's no big mile in that. That's not something that we admire. There's no nobility. You're liable for your own suffering if that's what you choose to do. If you take when you really don't need to take, so that's what our Gemara just described, and you're not going to live out your life without actually having issues, and if you're able to go to the other extreme and survive without taking when really you kind of need it, but you're able to pull through, so then you'll end up being somebody who gives stucca to others. So it could be that all of this is really a reference to this notion that we should try to do what we can to affect the balance, that when you actually need the stucca, okay, so then the machzoro applies, and you should take it, and that's the whole story. But we also encourage you to try to do what you can to try to reduce the burden on the seaboard. And if you err on the other side and you take more than you need to, because really you could have managed without it, so then the klala that's connected to that is that there'll come a time when you actually need it and where you don't even have that possibility of trying to live without it. Okay, so now we have a few more minutes left. Let's see the last part of this Gemara, which is going to really set us up for the final stage of the discussion next week. It's going to leave us with a lot of questions that we'll have to resolve. So says the Gemara, now apparently coming off of that, the Gemara asks from the Mishnah in Maseches Peah, Parakas Mishnah Ches Peah, Tanan Hasam, Ein Machayv Ben Oso Limkor Es Beso, that we do not obligate somebody to sell his house, Vyas Klei Tashmisho, or his utensils. Right, somebody who is taking from something, that's going to be a discussion what exactly he's taking from, Mishnah, it's like a shechupaya, but maybe it has broader applications. And so somebody who's taking from something that's meant for the poor. So what if he doesn't have enough cash to make him a non-ani, but he does have other assets? So do we make him sell the assets? So says the Mishnah, no, we don't make him sell his house or his utensils. So then asked the Gemara, lo, we don't make him sell the Hatanya, do we not learn? That if he was normally using gold, he should use silver. With silver, he should use nechoshes. So Amr v'svid lo kasha, have a mita v'sholchan, have a kosher zikaros. So maybe one's talking about his table and his bed, and one's talking about his silverware. So it says that, says the Gemara, well, maishna kosher zikaros. So if you can say it doesn't apply to kosher and ka'aros, a person's going to say it's disgusting to me to use anything less. So mita v'shulchan nami yirom b'kabel l'vay. You can say the same thing about the mita v'shulchan. He's not able to function with anything less. So amar rava b'rei d'rava b'nachreishu d'kaspa. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about a real luxury. Like he's got a skin scraper that's made out of silver. So that's already a little ridiculous. So then that he's going to have to sell. Or, that's Rabba's line. And the Papa says, Lo kasha kan kodim shiyavu de giboy, kan la'acher shiyavu de giboy. So the Papa's line, as you got to see this morning, if you saw the Marmakamos, is subject to probably five different interpretations in the Rishonim, what's going on here. What's this distinction about before giboy, after giboy? So what are some of the interpretations you find in the Rishonim about what this means? So maybe it means he took Shalokidin, right? What are the possibilities? So he already did take Shalokidin. One is after he already took and one is before he took Shalokidin. What other possibilities do you find in the Rishonim? Tamir?
From the Kubas
Taka, as opposed to like a Shechupaya? Right, so maybe that's the question. He's already took from... He's taking from Lekesh Echlopei, but now he wants to take from the Kupas Tzlaka, or he did already. Yes, sorry?
If he buys from using funds from the Kupas Tzlaka, mm-hmm. if he can sell those, if he's allowed to, if he has to sell those, then he has to sustain himself. That's a Yesh Omer in the first one.
Okay. Anything else? Okay, so without getting into all the details, it's a little complicated, but there are many different interpretations of what this Giboy distinction means and what it doesn't mean. But we're not focused on that right now in the interest of time. But what emerges is that theoretically there is the Chovas Mechira. Right? This is the flip side we talked about last semester, the Hefen Mechira. Right? So this is in honor of Shemitah, the Chovas Mechira, the obligation to sell if you want to end up taking stubborn. So what's the glaring question one could ask about the whole existence of the Sugya?
De Machsara,
right? So what's the difference between this and De Machsara? So does it make sense to say that if he doesn't have gold, silverware, we have to give it to him? But if he does have it, he has to sell it. Right, one might probably, if you had to intuitive, if you're going to distinguish between these two cases, you probably would have distinguished them the other way. Right? What's the more intuitive distinction? And wouldn't you have said it the opposite way around? You could have said the same thing both ways. Now, you could have said, if this is going to be completely consistent with De Machsara, so we should say that either we have to give him gold utensils and he's allowed to keep his gold utensils, or we could have said the other way around, that De Machsara doesn't require us to give him gold utensils and requires him to sell the gold utensils if he's going to take from Staka. We could have heard either of those, that would have been more consistent. And if we were going to split it, I think we probably would have split it the other way, right? We would have said that maybe we're not mechuyif to give it to him, but if he has it, okay, we don't make you sell stuff. That's probably, I think, you can tell me if you think I'm wrong, it's probably a more intuitive kind of distinction. So here, it sounds like the Gemara is saying the opposite, that you have to give it to him, but if not, if he has it already, then he has to sell it. So how do you deal with that? How do we address that? Any immediate thoughts? Yes, are you?
There is an obligation from the point of the Beis Din or from the community to give money to somebody, and then you have to figure out at what point, what are the obligations of the person receiving the money?
Okay, so we're saying we're looking at it from two different vantage points. So maybe we have, one is about the giver, who is held to a higher standard of De Machsara, and this Gemara, which then would flow very well from the previous Gemara, it's irrelevant in terms of what we're doing. It's about his receiving, that he has certain expectations on him what to do, which almost works, except that it sounds like, you know, we're, as a tzibor, kind of imposing this on him. Right, if it was only directed at him that we're saying, listen, they're going to give you the money, but it's not right, you should sell yourself instead, then it'd work a little better. But it sounds like we compel him to sell, and we say, no, we're not going to give you until you sell first. So it almost could have worked, but it's probably not 100%. Right?
But he's part of the sea board.
Right. So he's saying, so therefore, as the... Yeah. But he's part of the sea board.
He has the same fiat. You can say he has the same fiat as everyone else in the sea board to support the sea board.
He's saying, so therefore, his choosing to... He basically has to contribute to the sucker fund, right? So when the giving's happening, he gets to receive. But he also has his obligation to make sure that there's more to give by selling the extra stuff that he has.
He's to help the process.
Right, which is a fascinating possible distinction, right? So that really kind of focuses on sucker more as the mida, really, than the... Because we're saying that as far as receiving, he's going to end up receiving less, but... As far as the giving of staka, that it's still worth giving him, even though he ends up having to, so to speak, pay for his staka. Which is, or not really saying that the chachila should happen that way, but essentially things are working on two different tracks. It's a fascinating idea. So we're going to have to deal with this more at length, I guess. So next time, come back, this will be Monday. But just to kind of highlight what questions we have left over here, is that so we went through a couple of these sugyas, got to the end here, and we saw various questions and observations that could come out of these dinim. We focused particularly on the question of, is there a second track here that on the one hand the donor has an obligation, de machsara, the recipient maybe has his own responsibility to be memayit on that gift, and maybe that's what comes out from a couple of these sugyas here. And is there perhaps this kind of two-track tension? That was something that we saw coming out from a couple of these sugyas. We saw the question of how Halbanus Shnei Chavei Barabin comes in. We passed through the sugyas that we'll have to come back to about people who don't want to take, people who have money but don't want to spend it on themselves, about how Halbanus Shnei Chavei Barabin comes into the question. All of these important other halachic issues coming through, and the difference between that and somebody who's disinheriting his children but not going to spend it on himself. All those are sugyas we'll have to come back to, but as far as just understanding De Machsoru itself, so we saw some tension between where sometimes people were given what they want, even though it seems luxurious, in other cases where it was not given, leaving us then to figure out what are the parameters of De Machsoru that could account for these differences. And we end off with a sugya which really seems to call into question the whole din of De Machsoru, because it seems to tell you the opposite, essentially, that even if the Ani is accustomed, by definition he's accustomed, he already has these things. Right? So how could we reconcile the din of De Machsoru with the din of the Chovas Mechira? So that's something that we'll have to focus on next time. I'll just alert you to one, not so much a clue, but a little bit of a framing of the question, that one preliminary question you could ask is it meant to be reconciled or not? That it's striking that our Gemara doesn't really ask a steer. Right? Our Gemara, which is talking about De Machsoru, brings this din up kind of in a different context, and doesn't say, well, wait a minute, you just told me De Machsoru, and now you're telling me he's got to sell stuff. So it seems like our Gemara is probably okay with this din and De Machsoru coexisting, and very okay with it, and it's not even something that it has to really answer. Or does it answer? Is the Gemara somehow telling us parameters of De Machsoru here? That's one question to figure out. It's also noteworthy, you may have noticed this on the Mamar Komos, that the Rambam and the Shulchan Aruch, they paskin this din, but not connected to De Machsoru. And the Rambam, the halachos of De Machsoru in Matnas Aniyim Perek Zayin, and this din about Mechira is in Perek Tes. So maybe there isn't even a need, according to some of the Rishonim, and maybe according to the Bavli, to reconcile these din. While the Yerushalmi, if you had a chance to see the Yerushalmi maybe has it a little bit from a different angle. So essentially the mission before us is to figure out how to reconcile all of the challenges. We've seen now the principle of De Machsoru. We've seen various challenges to it, number of cases where it doesn't seem to apply. So that leaves us with having to figure out then what are the approaches that can sharpen the practice of De Machsoru, and how can these various challenges be reconciled into an integrated approach, and what are the practical applications, God willing, we will address that on Mondays. So again, tomorrow we have a doozy of an Aliyah, the Revi of Parshas Beshalach, is not one of the neglected Aliyahs in this case, so we'll have a lot to say about that, and stay warm and stay dry. Hey, Asher Shavisach,